From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro Fillmore District.
Bernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, we find out how local youth are turning the economy green.
I didn't like it because I had to talk to strangers, but once I got a hang of it, I'm like, okay, I like this.
Then we get the down low on how to work a crowd.
And then there's a classic for a 3-2 with a runner in scoring position. The old standby, we call it the ballpark.
And we get a backstage tour of an Oakland palace.
So the appropriate response in this space is to go, ooh, ah.
We're standing in awe of you today on Cross Currents. California leads the country in the creation of green jobs. Out of the 110,000 created nationally in 2012, 26,000 jobs were in our Golden State. That's close to 25%. These jobs range from solar and wind power installation to building mass transit. It's a good thing California is leading the pack as we head towards the year 2020. According to the landmark law AB 32, that's when a third of the state's power needs to be coming from renewable sources. KALW's Jen Sheehan visited a couple of training programs that are working to prepare Bay Area youth for the future green economy.
Pajay Horace and Victor Washington are conducting a test.
It's about 2.2.
Okay, so sink and shower is very efficient, running under 2 gallons per minute.
Horace and Washington have summer jobs with California Youth Energy Services, or CYES. It's a program that hires youth aged 15 to 22 to do free greenhouse calls in their communities. They go into people's homes to evaluate energy and water efficiency and then help install things like water-saving shower heads or compact fluorescent light bulbs. Horace is 22, and this is her third summer working for the CYES site in Berkeley and Emeryville. She says when she first started, she was pretty shy.
I didn't like it because I had to talk to strangers. But once I got a hang of it, I'm like, okay, I like this.
And with the water test, we just count to about 5, and then we see how much water ends up in a bag, and that tells us the water per minute.
3 gallons.
3 gallons?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's pretty high.
Some of the youth are very motivated because they're giving back to their community, and they're helping their community members save energy and water and also reduce their utility bills. And that's really powerful for them.
Jody Pincus is executive director of Rising Sun Energy Services, the nonprofit which runs the CS summer program, along with other green job training for youth and adults.
But, you know, they're not getting a job at Starbucks where they could learn equally valuable soft skills or professionalism, but it's not as meaningful in the sense of their contribution to the environment or to their community.
Rising Sun has been doing the CYES program for 14 summers now, long before the current green jobs trend. This partnership with PG&E and local city governments has grown from a pilot program of 15 youth serving 300 homes in Berkeley to about 100 youth going into 3,000 homes in 10 Bay Area cities. Pincus says one key to Rising Sun's longevity has been its so-called triple bottom line.
We're really look at people, planet, and prosperity equally.
What that means in practice is giving young people, especially low-income and at-risk youth, job skills and a paying job, all while learning about climate change.
So we are preparing them for any job that they'll have in their future, and ideally a job in the green economy.
Ah, yes, the green economy.
And I'll invest $150 billion over the next decade in affordable, renewable sources of energy.
That's candidate Barack Obama speaking back in 2008.
Wind power and solar power and the next generation of biofuels, an investment that will lead to new industries and 5 million new jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced.
The Obama administration's massive 2009 economic stimulus plan included $500 million for job training in the emerging clean energy market. $150 million of that was supposed to go to low-income communities through a program called Pathways Out of Poverty.
We need green jobs now. Folks are suffering now. People don't have jobs now. People have been thrown out their homes now. We need green jobs now.
People like former Oakland resident Van Jones, known for a while as the White House's green czar, predicted that the emerging green economy would lift low-income communities out of poverty. And in response to the flood of federal funding, hundreds of green job training programs sprung up around the country. Sprung up and then wilted. According to a 2011 report by the Department of Labor, many of these programs couldn't do what they promised, get their graduates into steady, well-paying jobs.
There was this conception that green jobs were somehow different than our regular occupations.
Carol Zabin is a labor researcher at UC Berkeley. She says that most green jobs, at least the ones in the big sectors of energy efficiency and renewables, are really construction jobs.
So we made a pretty big mistake, I think, in developing a lot of short-term green jobs training that weren't really related to these broader occupations.
Or lead to the higher-skilled, higher-paid jobs that would follow a growing green economy. That's something that organizations like Solar Richmond are trying to change. Here in the city of Richmond, unemployment is high, about 4% higher than the national average. And median family income is about 12% less than in California as a whole. Like Rising Sun in Berkeley, Solar Richmond started as more of a traditional job training model, in this case for solar panel installation. It's now grown into something more complex, with other types of training and job opportunities built into the organization.
And a lot of the young people, they gain so much knowledge and they learn so much, but as we all know, the job market is not really good.
Akili Carter is Solar Richmond's program manager. She says there just weren't enough jobs out there for her solar installation graduates. So the organization branched out into marketing, advocacy, and outreach. And with the help of partners like the City of Richmond, they created paid positions within the organization that used those skills.
Because, like, some people aren't meant to go on the roof. Some people like to talk and advocate, and they like to go out and meet people, and, you know, they like to canvas or even sales.
According to the Solar Richmond website, they've created over 300 temporary jobs and 50 permanent ones since 2006. But Carter, who went through the program herself, says it's about more than just job training.
They have to be built up to have that confidence and say, you know, I may be from a low-income community, but there's so many skills that I have innately inside of me and talent that I need to tap into that's going to allow me to get that job, whether it's green, blue, or white.
22-year-old Leela Turner found Solar Richmond's training program after a year of community college. She learned the carpentry and construction trade, but also skills like meditation, public speaking, and time management.
I got my license. I got my first apartment. I got a lot of stuff. I got my first car through Solar Richmond. They helped me out with so much stuff.
She now works as an administrative assistant in the main office. She's also one of four people, and the only woman, chosen to start Solar Richmond's new solar installation co-op, Pomoja Energy Solutions.
Being a part of the co-op, I'm my own business owner. So through my candidacy period, once that is over, hopefully if I get picked, I'll be a worker owner and I'll be doing commercial and residential installation for solar.
Labor researcher Carol Zabin says in-house initiatives like the co-op are a good response to the lack of green jobs. But most graduates of training programs go into entry-level jobs, which are often low-wage or short-term. Zabin says that placing people into better-paying jobs is a link that's often broken.
It's also the link that's most challenging for organizations training at-risk youth and low-income folks because they don't have any control over how jobs get created.
And, especially since the stimulus funding has run out, they don't have the money to just create hundreds of jobs on their own. So, even though Leela Turner says she's happy to be working at Solar Richmond, she actually has to have another job to make ends meet.
I work here as admin assistant and a solar installer and as the co-op, so it's like kind of three. And then I also work at Ross as a retail associate. I am in the fitting room and I'm a cashier. So I work normally 6 days a week.
100 watt is like either 18 or 23, your call.
Paget Horace says she's also glad to be where she's at this summer, doing greenhouse calls for Rising Sun. But she says she's looking further down the road.
I'm planning on going back to school for like business and communication so that I can get a degree and further my career that way. And maybe stay in this nonprofit or stay in the green field.
The green field may not have the same luster it did a few years ago. But for these young people just entering the workforce, it's still a good place to start. For Cross Currents, I'm Jen Sheehan.
This story was produced as a part of New America Media's Environmental Fellowship in partnership with Sound Vision Productions' Burn, an Energy Journal, with support from the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation and PG&E. To hear more reporting from this fellowship, you can visit our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Good organ music can be a religious experience, especially when it's written by composers like Johann Sebastian Bach and played in huge cathedrals on massive instruments with more than 10,000 pipes. But then there's the other organ music, played in a different type of cathedral by a man on a small Hammond organ above the left field bleachers. This is the music of Steve Hogan, organist for the San Francisco Giants. Baseball first saw the appearance of these motivational music makers in the 1940s at Wrigley Field in Chicago and Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, and many clubs then followed suit. But by the 1990s, most ballparks had done away with live organ players or severely cut back their playing time. Instead, they would turn to pre-recorded music, a lot of it rock, pop, and hip-hop, to play at inning breaks and crucial moments during the game. Recently, though, there's been a bit of an organ renaissance, and AT&T Park is one of the newest places you can hear the pipes play. For the last 3 years, Steve Hogan has played every day game the Giants have at home. KALW's Chris Hoff went to a game and brings us this story.
I probably have a repertoire of around 40 tunes that I can pull out at any given time. That's kind of my ballpark repertoire right now. My name is Steve Hogan. I'm the ballpark organist here at AT&T Park, and I do all the Giants day games throughout the season. I think the choice of instrument is absolutely critical for the ballpark organ. I'm not going to name any teams, but I definitely hear a lot of organ sounds around the league that just, to me, sound very synthetic and kind of cheesy. So I got this. This is a digital organ, and it's made by Hammond. It's a Hammond XK3, to be precise. And it's kind of a clone of the classic Hammond B3, you know, that used in churches and in rock and roll music and gospel music. So when the Giants are batting, I am taking cues from the stadium DJ, Lee Merritt, and I just try to get the crowd going. Kind of accelerate, move it up half step. Yeah, that gets people clapping along, and that one is very effective, very simple and effective. You know, there are two real bread and butter bits that we play just to get the crowd clapping along, and one is, well, we call it number 11. Also known as Let's Go Giants. It's the classic. And then the other one is number 7. Those are by far the most used. Usually if there's not a rally going on and we just want to try to get something started, those are the go-tos. I got this gig. It's kind of a who you know scenario. I actually work in another day job that I have with a guy who was the DJ for the Giants for about 10 years. So what we did first actually was go into a studio and record some organ bits. He just kind of wanted to freshen up the organ bits that he played during the game. And then one day he invited me in just to do it live one Sunday afternoon. And Giants executive staff liked it and wanted to keep it going, so they invited me to do all the day games. As far as my standby bits, I mean, certain ones are saved for the more dramatic situations. So I don't get a chance to play them every game, but there's Phantom of the Opera. That always gets the crowd pretty riled up. Another one for the dramatic situation is Iron Man by Black Sabbath. Ba, 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 ba. That's usually when one of the home run hitters comes up, like Hunter Pence or Buster Posey, and it's 3-2 or something. Since I grew up hearing the ballpark organ, it is a piece of the experience that I miss when it's not there, that's for sure. Yeah, I think it helps me enjoy the game just a little bit more, for sure. And I hope that I do that for these people.
You can catch Steve Hogan this weekend at AT&T Park. He'll be playing at Saturday and Sunday's games, which are the Giants' final two games of the season. First pitch is at 1:05 on both days. Do you have a musical memory from the ballpark? What songs do you associate with watching baseball games? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106.
Hey, wait, Hannah, I've got one.
What? Oh, hey, it's Chris Hoff, the guy who produced that piece and one of our plucky engineers.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, listen, there's this totally strong musical association that I have with going to Oakland A's games back in the late 80s.
Not the Giants, huh?
No, I've been an A's fan my whole life.
Okay, take it away, Chris.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to say, every game that I ever went to at the Oakland Coliseum as a kid, they would play Booker T's Green Onions, you know, every single game. And I didn't even know who Booker T was back then or what the song was even called. But man, to this day, I cannot get enough of Green Onions. It's the best baseball-associated song ever, hands down. Well, I mean, for me, anyway.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And if you, dear listener, have a story, tell it to us. We're at 415-264-7106. Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound, which also includes an organ.
Are you all ready to play Deco Wiz?
To bring you the answer, we sent KALW's Ashley Ann Krigbaum on a behind-the-scenes tour.
So the appropriate response in this space is to go, ooh, ah, there you go. Hey, everybody, I'm Ken Marcus, and welcome to the Paramount Theater in downtown Oakland. We're inside this beautiful, magnificent Art Deco movie vaudeville palace, and I can't wait to show you around. December 16th, 1931, opening day, huge crowds, everybody dressed up, men in their hats, ladies in their gowns, sellout crowd, of course. 120-foot vertical sign we just talked about out front. You can see it from all over Oakland, shining through the night. The theater was built in 1931, but shortly after it opened, the Depression really cast a pall, not just on the entire economy, but of course the Paramount Theater. They actually closed for over a year. They had literally unscrewed light bulbs to save money on electricity. They would open it once a month and have a movie night, just to keep the charter of the building as an entertainment complex. And so that's really where the tradition of movie night began. It was a requirement to keep the building open. And so it started way back in the 30s and continues today. All right. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the Paramount is proud to present the Paramount Organ. We're very fortunate here to have a number of different musicians that are able to play our Wurlitzer organ. It's not the case around a lot of the rest of the country. And so when we are able to have one of these artists here, as we do it with every movie night, and they play in the half hour before we begin the show, it sets the scene. It's the sound of 1931. It's the sound that you would have heard in 1931 if you were to come and be a part of the experience of this movie vaudeville house. In terms of a song that I love to hear, I have to admit, I'm a little prejudiced, but it's the Paramount on Parade, and it's the song that's played last. As the curtain is rising, and as the hydraulic orchestra pit is rising, and we're exposing the giant Deco wind wheel, and we're about to begin the show. Paramount on Parade is our theme song here. It's very easy to clap along with. In fact, if people come to the movie night, you'll know, because all the veterans that do come back, they know when to start clapping and clap along with the Paramount on Parade theme song.
Well, a lot of you got this week's sound right, but we can only have one winner.
That is the sound at the Paramount Theater on their classic movie nights. I've been there. It's fun. $5. Great old feature films and a beautiful movie palace. Best movie deal in town, unless it was free.
Congratulations, Rashid Patch. You're our winner this week, and we will send you a KALW t-shirt. For everyone else, we'll have a new mystery sound next week. Here's a sneak peek. Not quite sure what that was? Are you sure? Stay tuned to KALW to hear it again, or check out Audiograph on our website, kalw.org. And that's a wrap for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ryan Miller, Daniel Moore, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Thank you. This is the New Century Chamber Orchestra from San Francisco. They're playing at Cal Performance's 4th Annual Fall Free for All at UC Berkeley on Sunday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.